Welcome to the Rise Up Podcast, brought to you by Athletes on the Rise, the training company dedicated to developing complete athletes that obtain college scholarships and professional contracts. Athletes on the Rise uses multidisciplinary sports science knowledge to develop athletes mentally, physically, technically, and tactically. We go above and beyond what is expected to give you a training experience that is tailored to you in a way no one else can offer. Train with us and become the best version of yourself. Athletes on the Rise, training redefined. Follow us online at our website, http://aotr.training. On Instagram, @aotr.training. On Twitter, @aotr_training. And then facebook.com/aotr.training. We have a great podcast for you today. Today's guest is my friend, Joy Burke. Joy has had an incredible journey to share. She was a late bloomer, so to speak, and emerged as a Division I scholar athlete at Arizona State University. Was also played professional basketball overseas for multiple years, in addition to becoming an ambassador for Nike. She came to the USA from Taiwan as a 12-year-old and never before touched a basketball. So we're going to go through her story about how she came so far so quickly, you know, and how basketball shaped her life. We'll go into detail about what she was able to do to form her game and become an impact player, and how basketball has opened doors to experiences she couldn't have ever imagined. In addition, we'll discuss the impact of culture and how it affects the style of basketball played in different parts of the world, how she continues to evolve her game as a pro, and how her international life and her faith continues to shape her life as she inspires positive change in those around her. As always, there'll be a lot of details to dive into, so turn the brain on, ready to learn, and enjoy the podcast. Eric Figanski here from Athletes on the Rise on the Rise Up podcast, here with my friend Joy Burke. Joy is a former Arizona State alumnus where she played women's basketball. She's gone on to play in Australia. She's played for the Chinese Taipei national team. She's also played in Denmark. So she has a wealth of experience here that we're going to jump into. So Joy, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Eric. So appreciate this opportunity to get to talk to you and be on your podcast.
Yeah, well, thanks, Faith. Thanks for taking the time. What we're going to be doing here today with Joy is we're going to have a couple of different sections. First section, we're gonna be talking about her development as a player at the different levels, how that went along. We're going to jump into some struggles that she may have had throughout the entire development, the ups and downs, and how she is able to overcome them. We'll talk a little bit to her collegiate and professional recruiting experiences, and then we'll have some bits and bobs towards the end here that are that I think the listeners here will find interesting. So we'll jump right into it. You know, one of the first things we usually talk to, or we usually start the podcast with, if I'm talking with players that have played at, you know, professionally, is usually, you know, when and why did they start playing the game? So obviously, as a basketball player, we all have our different stories. So when did that start for you?
Yeah, so I think like most tall girls in the game of basketball, like, you know, basketball, like I feel like I didn't choose it. It chose me. And,
okay.
you know, there's that. It's funny because I look back on the early days and there was just that tension constantly of like, you know, people seeing potential in me, but me not really owning it like as much as. You know, it's almost like, oh yeah, like I love this game, or, you know, I'm so inspired by it. It was more the fact that like people believed in me and they saw that I could do it, even though I wasn't like this overly athletically inclined kid. Like I still am like a girly girl, and Like I remember growing up, like I have a younger brother and he was just like so into sports and like, and I just remember like, no, like I like my personal space. Like I don't like the sweat. And so it's just hilarious thinking about this whole like journey of basketball that, I've been able to make a career out of it. Like that's nothing short of miraculous. And so, yeah, it's, I think how I got started was really when I was 12 years old, we moved from Taiwan to America. Mm-hmm. And I was in Arizona at the time with my family. And I remember like it was right in January when we moved. And the first day of school, the principal at my school handed me a basketball jersey and basically said, hey, you're on the team, you know? And I was like, what? Like, I play basketball? And of course, my first game was literally that day, right? And so I didn't even tell my parents, like, I had this.
How old were you?
I was 12. Yeah, I was 12, but I was pretty tall by then, you know? And
how tall?
I'm not going to say. Only because I don't want to mess up the facts, you know, like I don't fully remember exactly how tall I was, but definitely tall enough to be like, you know, forced on the team regardless of ever even knowing or playing the game. So
that's so somewhere between 5'8" and 6 foot.
Yeah, I would say five. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. That
range. How tall are you now?
I'm 6'5".
You are 6'5".
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, all right. So you kind of got thrown into it by your new school. You're like, hey, you need to play now.
Yeah, I did. And man, am I so thankful for those early days, because it was just, you know, it was awkward, right? Like, imagine just learning the game, like, because at this point, you know, most people who play basketball, especially like in club teams and at the high school level, mm-hmm. and stuff, like they had been playing, like in America, you can start being on a team once you're like 3 or 4 years old, you know, like
different
like little baby leagues out there. And so for me, like it was just, I was so new to the game and just different concepts. Like I remember, you know, I would start just so we could get jump ball, mm-hmm. and, you know, I'm just kind of like running around trying to not, you know, draw any attention to myself or even get the ball. So there's some very, it's funny because like it's been quite a few years now, but I have some very specific memories from the early days.
Share some stories.
It's really embarrassing. Well, here's one. So I remember like that first game, and somewhere in the second half, meanwhile, like, mind you, like, I had just started my first day of school in America, like, everything's mm-hmm. new to me, like, this is just all, feels like a dream. Well, I get the ball somewhat underneath the basket, and I'm actually trying to, like, pass it to my teammate, but somebody mm-hmm. fouls me, and so the ref calls it as a shooting foul, and so all of a sudden, like, people are kind of, like, lining up, and of course, it's, like, the first free throw of the game, and so I'm like, don't know what I'm doing.
What do I do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then so I go and I stand like right at the top of the 3-point line, like right at the top of the key.
Yes.
And the ref's like, hey, you can scoot up, like come to this line. And so he like, you know, bounce passes me the ball at the free throw line. And I just right away like chuck it up and it hits the top of the backboard. It comes straight back. and then of course, like I had another attempt and it was like just as bad. But I remember that so clearly. And then I also remember, you know, after I kind of like had a few games under my belt, I just would not use the backboard ever. Like, and I remember my coach at the time, she like, bless her heart, she like was trying so hard, but she made me write on a piece of paper, like, I love backboard 100 times. 'Cause all I wanted to do was just like swish or try to, like, I didn't understand like angles and just, backboard is your friend, you know? And so I remember those things. Backboard is your friend 100 times. Yeah. So it was not it was not an easy start for me, but of course, like, you know, I had people would just catch wind. Like here in America, I think coaches are so in tune. And so when all of a sudden there's like a girl who's got height and she's playing, and so, you know, I was super, super fortunate right away. I was in touch with one of the best skills trainers in Arizona at the time. And he was working with like really high quality players that were already like playing at the high school level, but getting top scholarship offers from like Stanford. And, you know, so it, he's working with like all American type of category people. And he heard about me, and he basically was like, you know, I want you to play on my club team, and I'm committed to like training you every single day for an hour. Are you willing?
Right.
And, you know, like bless his heart, his name is Kenny Drake. And he was the one that literally taught me the game, everything from like a layup to hook shots, to my jump shot, to ball handling skills, and like the mental side of the game, you know, where, you know, I was just like basketball and sport is not just physical. So much of it is like how your mindset, when you approach those lines. And for me, it was really hard being like a gentle, like nice girl, like to think that once I crossed the lines, I could be like,
you're a killer.
It was, to me, I was just like, I mean, you know, so he had so much patience, and I really, you know, I really did all through the rest of like, you know, when I was 12, I was in sixth grade, but for junior high all the way through high school, up until I went to Arizona State University, he like worked with me every single day. And there were days where I, especially early on, you know, like you don't really understand discipline and you don't understand hard work at that age. And yet, like, I'm so appreciative that even days where I didn't feel like it, that's when my parents were like, I don't care. You, like, you committed to this, like you're going. And, and so we actually like practiced a lot, you know, just outdoors, you know, in front of the house or at the local park, and, you know, where you don't have a great backboard. but he was really great. And and so that's what kind of gave me that foundation to go from being so new to the game with so much potential to now being one of the top recruited players in the country, and getting like tons of Division I offers. And that's like a whole nother side of the story. But
No, I mean, that's it. But it's definitely a different developmental path than, you know, some of the people that I've been speaking with and that I'll be having podcasts with coming up with as well. It's you were thrown in the game. You're like, I don't know if I necessarily like this. And then you had those coaches that kind of were very patient with you. You're like, you're going to be okay. Do it like this and step by step. And that allowed you to kind of fall in love with the game and develop.
Absolutely. You couldn't have said it best, because like, and that's why I've always, all throughout, like even my career professionally, I've always built great relationships with my coaches, because they're the people that are bringing out the best in me. You know, even if I don't like always love their style or delivery, like I get to know them on a personal level, and just like that influence of a coach, especially at a young age, like to have a total stranger see something in you that you don't even see yourself. I mean, that just does something to a person where it's like maybe this part of me was dead or I didn't even know, and it's now alive, you know? And I think, so just like speaking life into people and speaking into their potential, it's just amazing for human development. Yeah. And I'm so thankful to have had those key people in my life and still throughout my life who encourage me and challenge me and continue to try to bring out the best in me. And Kenny is definitely an excellent example of that.
Sure. And do you still stay in touch with Kenny then? Do you still talk to him here and there?
Yeah. More so when I was still kind of in Arizona.
Sure.
But yeah, he's doing a great job. He was still, last I heard, with my Arizona Elite Club team and doing what he does best. And And yeah, so it's really cool.
Good. So I want to go back a little bit. You were talking about, you know, you came over from was it Taiwan, you said, right?
Yes.
Yes, from Taiwan. And so when you came over to America, were you speaking English right away, or is there that little bit of a learning curve? What was that like, yeah, that culture change?
That's really cool that you picked up on that. You know, I was fortunate to being like growing up in Taiwan. My dad's American and my mom's Taiwanese. Okay. So growing up, gotcha, I learned English and Chinese at the same time. And and so I kind of thought it was one language, to be honest. And all of my sentences were just all mixed up. But everyone that I knew that. And it wasn't until I went to school, and I always went to an American school because like I just was not, I couldn't fit in a Chinese school. Like, not because, you know, I wasn't smart enough, but because I wouldn't take naps, believe it or not. That was why. Okay. So I got in trouble for like never wanting to sleep during school.
You wanted to run around and just,
yeah, pause habit, huh? Yeah, I wanted, I didn't like a kid, I was a kid that like didn't like to sleep ever. So it's amazing because as a pro, like naps become like your thing, but
your bread and butter. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but like, no, I was just super active. I didn't want to miss out on anything. And the teachers would always like put me in a corner and like make me just like hold a pose there until, you know, it was either that or lay down and sleep, you know? <Yeah. laughs> And I was like this stubborn child that's like, you know, I'm going to take a stand. And my parents are just like, okay, you're going to go to American school. Yeah. So anyway, I was actually more like fluent in English only because like reading and writing and all of that was, even though I was in a foreign country, I was in an American-based school system. And so then the transition over to America academically wasn't an issue. It was just more the fact that like environmentally things were just different, you know, like culturally. So that was, for me, an easier adjustment than like my brother, just because I was a little bit older and got into sports right away, which is like another reason why I love team sports. You just build that connection with people that you don't get just from, you know, going to school and leaving. You know what I mean? Like those bonds you form when you're going through adversity or winning together and celebrating together. It's just, it's just the best. So, yeah. So English, you know, I'm thankful that I didn't have to just learn it.
Yeah, just jump in.
Like
yeah.
That. Yeah.
Yeah, that would have made things a little bit more difficult. Yeah. So let's speak to a little bit of the skill development then. So, you know, you come in, you have this game, you're throwing things off the backboard. People are being patient, but you're probably getting some looks from players like, who is this girl?
Yeah.
And then, all right. So then you meet up with Coach Drake, Kenny Drake, and he's like, "Hey, I'm gonna work with you." So, kind of talk about that development process. Meaning, okay, hey, what was his game plan? What did he say? Like, hey, this is where you, because, and again, he might have a completely different style, but it is when I'm speaking from a training point of view with the athletes I'm working with, it's like, hey, you kind of lay the framework. Hey, this is where you are. You know, this is what we're gonna work on now. This is the reason why. And you know, these are the steps we're going to make. And you know, it's going to probably, it's obviously at some give and take as far as like you have your estimates. This is how long I think it's going to take to get to here. This is how long I think it's going to take for you to get for this piece. But what, you know, what was that kind of game plan that he set out, if he did, or what's, you know, what was that experience like? What were the focus points just when you were starting off at that age?
Yeah, you know, he was so good about just like repetition and doing things the correct way, even if it didn't feel normal to me, you know? And so I think like a lot of times, like, especially kids now, or, you know, I could have had these like dreams of, oh, I want to go out there and look like someone on like an And-One mixtape, like, you know, balling out. But the reality of it is just like learning any new skill, like the foundation of the basics And that repetition that only comes through time, doing it the correct way, over and over and over again, that's what his focus was. So really, you know, I think he was so good about, like, you know, the game of basketball is exciting because, like, there's, as a basketball player, like, you have to build on all skill sets, you know, and it's not just like you're doing one thing, you know, you're having to defend, you're having to rebound, you're having to handle the ball, like, you know, you got to be able to hit a jump shot or make a layup. And so there's all these different skills that you have to put together. But, you know, like starting with the basic frameworks, he was kind of helping me like positionally develop where I would still go out and have games, you know, but I would feel like, wow, the things that I was doing, like it was showing up in the games, it was transferring, you know? But it looked like, you know, a lot of, we'd always start with like ball handling type of drills where you just get that, you gotta have touch even as a post player, you know, being able to finish, it takes that finesse that you need with the ball. And so getting a feel for the ball, that's how we always started, probably like 10 minutes of that. And then, and then we would do a lot of like form shooting, a ton of form shooting, of just making sure, like, I remember even as like I started to improve, we'd always start with form shooting and just having the like the correct form as far as like the elbow tucked under, like that the good follow through, you know, all these different things. And I remember every single shot he would adjust. He would say, hey, like elbow sticking out. Or, hey, like, bend your knees. Or, hey, like, follow through. And he would call out.
Yeah, the feedback.
Yeah, every single rep, to where I started to be able to, like, those cues were helping me focus in on that skill set. And then and then he kind of, like, really, really helped me even develop a mindset as a shooter, because it was – you know, a lot of times, like, I see people getting frustrated even within like a shooting drill, you know, or just getting shots up and like, oh, like I just missed, you know, a few in a row. And he really taught me like really early on, just the importance of, okay, if I make it, in my mind, I'm saying yes. If I miss, I say clear, and I really just clear it. And I focus on the next shot. And as he's giving me feedback, I'm taking that in. And now I'm focused on the process and the mechanics instead of the results, which I think we all want the results. But if we do the mechanics right, the results will come. And so so that just verbally teaching me like how to process, like making a shot and missing and not getting too emotionally caught up in either of those two, just gave me that sense of like, okay, you know, it really also helped me develop into being a great shooter. And I still do those things to this day. You know, I don't try to like, it's just all a part of me now. And it's almost like not just his voice, but
it's automatic.
Other coaches who've come in and given me additional feedback and all that with my shot, those are all now a part of my almost toolbox, you know, where it's like, as I'm shooting on my own, I can hear them saying, do this, you know, adjust this. And that's the fun part about growing as a player, because you can see that influence. So I would say, just to answer your question, you know, it was a lot of just simplifying the game and building on the fundamentals.
Right. Yeah. And I think one of the big keys that a lot of trainers miss out on, and I think this is one place that I can improve on my own as well, is like you're talking about that mental game, just that simple thing of being able to clear your mind, is super important. As you know, and you read, you know, it's really for him, in my opinion, I think it was a little bit ahead of his time, because you get into some of the sports psychology research nowadays, and they talk about those, you know, competition routines, pre-competition, post-competition, during competition, etc. You know, and he really got that into you immediately. Like it was like one of the first things, like, hey, okay, no need to be frustrated. Yeah, clear it. You made it? Yes. All right. Have that positive emotion. But keeping you positive the entire time. Yeah. And that, you know, and that leads to more enjoyment as well.
you know, it kind of keeps you going.
Yeah, that's so good, because it really, because this was like the part of basketball that I felt like I was like catching up a lot, and and it grew to the point, because this is what I was doing more than even playing games or team practice, you know, like I was doing these individual workouts, and it just grew to, even to this day, like some of my, like, I love playing games, don't get me wrong, but like, I love being in the gym with a coach and doing individual workouts. Like sometimes in the past, I loved that more than games, which is funny because you do that for the games, but I just grew into such a love for that time of like, wow, like I'm improving my skills, you know? Right. And yeah, that was really fun for me. And also I think he was really good about that mental side of things, because I don't think anyone wants to like mess up. Nobody wants to like look stupid out there, you know? But I was also at that age, like really like attention to detail. And I had this almost like perfectionist mindset where I wanted things to be exactly right, you know, and I would be really, really hard on myself when it wasn't. And so he really ingrained that in me. And it's like, hey, this is a place where you can mess up, you know, and so just the type of, cause I think like knowing your athlete and knowing like how they respond and what helps them. Like for me, that was the biggest thing, because I was like always the type that put so much pressure on myself and almost like didn't enjoy it, you know, because I was all caught up in that.
Mm-hmm. No. And the fact that at that age, again, that you were able to just get those fun, you know, those basic fundamental mental pieces in addition to the fundamental like skills pieces. I mean, kids go for ages without being able to get that. And also what was coming to mind, you know, you were saying, you know, you were in the gym working with a coach more one-on-one, working on your skills more so than you were working or that you were playing games. And I think, you know, in that's a very almost like European type of like development.
Yeah.
And because nowadays, especially in America, it's play. I mean, kids go from middle school or high school season to AAU season. And then you're looking at their development curve and you're just like, you know, the kid still can't, you know, use his left hand, still can't shoot.
Right.
You know, where are you getting better? And I think that's, again, a key point that I try to harp on with a lot of players and parents especially is, you know, they need to put in their work. They need to work on their skills. It doesn't matter how much you play, especially at those young, you know, at those really young ages as you're being introduced to the sport.
It's because all
about how much you can develop.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And, you know, there's benefit in playing a lot of games because you get the rhythm of the game and all that.
But it's needed, for sure.
You definitely can also build in some really bad habits that can be harder to adjust or correct later on. And so I think finding that like almost balance where you are getting games in, but also like focusing on the individual skills, that'll only make you a better player for sure.
Right. Okay. So let's talk a little bit then as far as progression. So you know, he laid the base, you're able to dribble with the right hand, left hand, finish with right hand, left hand, use the backboard. You're able to shoot.
Yeah.
At what point in time did he start to realize, you guys kind of came to the point of like, all right, now let's really dive into the footwork. Let's work on these face up moves. Let's work on the stuff back to the basket, the up and unders. You know, at what stage did you really start to get into those pieces?
Yeah, I think as I can't remember like the correct time phase of all of that, but I think as I started to get more comfortable and he could tell that I was like really understanding, you know, what I was doing, like, you know, fundamentally, I think we did go more into back to the basket types of moves and hook shots and then just like, I think footwork as a post player is so important, you know, like, because you're not dealing with a ton of space. Like it's limited, and knowing like how to use your pivot, how to use the fakes, how to stay balanced when, you know, people are pushing you, like, it's just, that was a part that for me was a huge learning curve, because I still don't even think I'm great at that.
You know, it's still just, stuff you're always trying to work on.
Yeah. But my, as far as my face up game, that came more as a pro. Everything before was a lot of hook shots, a ton of back to basket moves, like keeping the ball away from the defender. And then also just the focus on rebounding. Like, so much of my game, as a young player all the way through the pros, it was all about offensive rebounds, running the floor, like sprinting in transition, getting layups. And like majority of my points came from that, and the rest of it was just an added bonus. You know what I mean? Like touches you get within the offense, or relying on a great pass here and there. Like I had to really learn how to just go after it myself, you know? And so he definitely worked a lot on that part as well. 'Cause that's more of that's a little bit of skill, but that's also a lot of a mindset.
Yeah. And so did you, I'm curious, with one of your main things being rebounding, did you ever watch film on guys like Rodman or, Barkley, those type of characters, or even in some from the women's game, like Lisa Leslie or, Lobo, et cetera, how they were able to like get position and watch angles and watch how the shots came off. Like, what did you get into any of the scientific kind of breakdown in your mind? Hey, I know if the ball is like this, it's going to be here. If it's like this, it's going to be here. Did you ever kind of dive into those details?
Yeah, I remember watching Candace Parker a lot. Cause at that time she was still playing at Tennessee and just was like the best player. And I loved how she was able to always be able to get the ball, no matter if she was being fronted or however the defense was playing, she was just so good at that. And so I would really study her game a lot, not just on the rebounding end, but as far as I really wish I also looked more into the men's game at that time too, those names that you mentioned, Dennis Rodman, that would have been huge. Just understanding how to pursue the ball instead of waiting for it to come to you. And I think as a rebounder too, this is something I just noticed more as I was developing. You got to know your teammates and know how they shoot. And, it's so much of it is about position and timing, but doing your work ahead of time to be able to get that. And that's something that, it takes a ton of chemistry and practice and just that feel for the game that I think you get when you do play a lot of games. But as far as because I know just even thinking now as a pro, I know my shooters and I know how, if they're going to shoot flat or, all while the ball is still in the air. And so you can kind of adjust your positioning from that standpoint, where in the past I would have tried to maybe more fight for position, kind of the weak side board. But now I try to it's almost if I'm in the mid post, free throw line area, I love just being able to kind of sprint in and go get the ball. Mm-hmm. I love that more so than holding a position, wait for it to, and I was doing a lot of that early on in my career. Which
that's really interesting. No, because it's, and if we can dive into a few more of the details, you talk about how you were able to, create chemistry and know, hey, this shooter's going to shoot it like this, this shooter's going to shoot it like that. Let's talk about those. Hey, how do you know what's going to happen if they are shooting flat? What if they do have a higher arc? What if it is, how do you recognize if it's going to come off to the right and left? Like, what things do you pick up on so you can anticipate how it comes off the rim?
Yeah. So I actually am intentional about when I'm in the gym with my teammates and we're getting shots up, I'm going to partner up with our shooters, the people who get the shots up on the team, because as we're doing that repetition of maybe you make 10, then I go. And then, we're kind of doing that typical, mm-hmm. you know, like shooting type of rhythm shooting. Just by like doing that simple thing with your different shooters and players on the team, you start mm-hmm. to develop, like you can see their shot and you know, like where they normally miss and where they're knocked down at. And so I found that to be one of the times where, you know, I'm really focused on that instead of just, oh, I'm like the rebounder passer right now, you know, like I'm watching Great. Them as much as I'm encouraging them and all of that. I'm also paying attention to where can I stand in this position to be able to get their makes or their misses, you know, and
Great.
That's probably where I'm tuned into it the most, but,
okay.
But then, you know, you have other resources like film and all of that as well that you kind of know within the offense who we're looking to get the ball to and at what time and all of that.
Right. So, and then do you do the same thing for defensive rebounding as far as, hey, we know when this person shoots when it's off, most of the time it's going to be here. When this person
I wish I knew my opponents that well, you know.
You only see so many on film.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm pretty lucky. Like my league in Australia, we have a ton of teams, so you know, you kind of you don't get sick of seeing like the same people. But you know, I think so much defensively, it's just about position and making sure that like you're boxing out and mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. many times it depends on the matchup too. Like I think, you know, like you're pretty familiar with the international game and post players like are just as lethal on the 3-point line. So sometimes like, you know, defensively, I might not be right underneath the basket, you know, I might be at the top of the key or, you know, so all of that changes as the game like expands and grows and that kind of thing. But mainly just, I recognize that like every team that I'm on, one of my greatest attributes that I can bring is rebounding. And so I try to like make it intentional, you know, like I'm going after the ball, even if it's not in my area. And that goes offensively and defensively. And offensively, I'd only probably limit that if I was in foul trouble, because you can pick up a couple more fouls trying to, you know.
Been there.
Defensively, not so much, but definitely you can get a little,
You have to read the refs sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have to just see how they're calling the game, right? So, I mean, you were mentioning, you really led right into the next piece I wanted to talk to. You spoke about how, you know, growing up in high school and you're developing the fundamentals, then you develop the back to the basket game and the footwork pieces there. Now, and then it was really the same all the way through Arizona State. Then all of a sudden you start coming overseas and playing in different areas. Now, and at that stage, the game really started changing internationally and domestically as well. So what did you have to do to stay competitive? What did you have to learn to continue to refine? What did you have to put in your bag to allow you to still be that competitor and maintain your effectiveness and efficiency on the court?
Yeah, that is a huge question, you know, and I'm very appreciative where I've played in places where I've had tremendous resources available mm-hmm. to me, as far as like having, you know, coaches and people that are willing to take time out of their schedule to help you. But I recognize that that's not the case everywhere professionally. A lot of times you're on your own, whether it's the things mm-hmm. you do in the gym, you know, like as far as like getting stronger, working on your agility, your footwork, or it's stuff on the basketball court. And I think, you know, I met you in Denmark, which was my first pro season. And for me, like my mindset going into that was like, hey, you know, it was never my dream to play pro. Like, I'm just going to like check this off my list, say that I did it, and then not play, you know? So I say like, you know, I didn't take as much advantage of developing my game and stuff when I was there, only because I was just more like, mm-hmm. just kind of, you know, I'm here to
check this off the list. Let's get this done. Have some fun.
Which like that year was just, a huge year for me learning to, like, I changed so much as a player and as a person my first pro season. Because, I mean, think about it, like, at the college level, especially at Division One, you have every type of resource available to you, you know, and like, even at Arizona State, like, I had access to not only my four basketball coaches, but a strength and conditioning coach, a breathing coach, a life coach, a chaplain, like, we had a nutritionist, like, literally every single part of your life, you know, you have somebody who's like championing you along the way to be better. And so I really gained that piece while I was in college. But what I would say in Denmark is like where I discovered my love for the game again. And okay. And that was just something that I don't think any player should ever lose, because
right.
it's that passion that is the fire that keeps you going, because there's right. so many like challenges and setbacks that every single person faces throughout their game and career. And I definitely had my fair share, but Denmark, you know, I remember I had you there a little bit, and then the coaches from Spain, like, they were so awesome.
Miguel and
yeah, Burnett. Yep. Yeah, they were just like, the Spanish game is so high level when it comes to individual skills that right. they were just a wealth of knowledge to have around. And even though they were like the coaches for the men's team, it was still really awesome to be able to learn from them, and like the face up mm-hmm. game and so I would say, like, as a pro in that season, I had to learn how to like really be intentional about not only mm-hmm. taking care of my body and getting still continuing to get stronger, because I was somebody that, like, the gym isn't like my passion, you know, I like basketball but you want right. me to go like hit the weights like that like I'll do it, you know, I'll do it because right, it was right. like mandatory, you know, but it's not yeah. my favorite thing. And but I would say, you know, like, thankful to have teammates like Ivana, who was much further mm-hmm. along in her pro career than I was, and just different people like that were there at that time. It was even Roberto was my head coach, and he just right. had so much passion for the game and really like allowed me to blossom into, okay, now what's needed of me as an import, you know, a person that this team has literally like paid for to come help them win, you know? Right. And so it was multi-layered as far as like development, going into now that transition from like college where you're told what to do to pros where now it's all kind of in your control. You do as much as you want to, but
right
now up to, you know, like, what are you going to do with that yeah. freedom, you know? And,
right.
And so it was a learning process for me, but fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then moving on from Denmark, then what was the next stop from there? Was it right to Australia, or did you go down to Chinese Taipei? I think you yeah. said it was.
Yeah.
What was the next step? You know, that's where, you know, you and I, we, you know, we had our separate routes that we went. And so for the listeners out there, you know, her and I were, you know, we're learning a lot about each other right now. We haven't spoken for a minute, so learning all this is super inspiring yeah. to hear about this journey and your perspective. But yeah, so what was the next step?
Well, I'll have to backtrack a little bit, because in Denmark, especially like right after Christmas and the second half of the mm-hmm. season, there was just this switch that went off in me, like where mm-hmm. I wasn't just trying to like get through it. And, you know, like a lot of times I think people can imagine like an import life overseas as almost like a bunker life. And, you know, like you're just like playing games and basketball is life and that's all you do, you know, like for me, it was almost like a greenhouse, like is what I can explain it as, where I was allowed to flourish and grow. And you know, I went into that season, like I mentioned earlier, thinking, you know, I'm going to check this off my list and I'm going to be done. Like, mind you, I don't have an agent. Like my whole entire, I've played six pro seasons and represented my country on multiple occasions. And I've never had an agent through all of it. Which is like a really unique situation. But I was, you know, as far as Denmark goes, I went into that last month of the season, just kind of like wanting to really make the most of it, and not just on the court, but with the people around me, and realizing that, hey, I'm here. Like they basically took me from America and put me in this place where I didn't know anyone initially. And I felt like I was at first approaching it almost like innately selfishly, like what can I get out of it? But then there was this switch that happened where it was like, hey, I'm here. Like I'm going to make the most of my time on and off the court. And I want to like, I don't know how much longer I'll be here for, but I want to make this place better than when I came, you know, like I really, I want to be all in right here, right now. And that changed everything for me. And that was what led to like my team winning the championship. And that's still like in my entire career, like that's the only championship I've ever won. You know, it's kind of sad. Sure. So many games and so many seasons. But, you know, it was like, I think that in that switch and that mindset of like, instead of like approaching things, you know, about like, oh, what can I get? But what can I give? It changed everything for me. And then having that newfound like love for the game and purpose behind, hey, like I might be a basketball player. That might be the vehicle, which is how I'm here. But while I'm here, since I'm sacrificing time away from my family and my friends and people back home, like I don't want to waste this time. You know what I mean? Because for me, it comes with a cost. Not only is it an opportunity, but there's sacrifice involved being, you know, on the other side of the world, the majority of the year and living out of a suitcase. Mm-hmm. Like it comes with a tremendous price. And instead of like, you know, just kind of going through the motions or collecting the paycheck, like it became more so like almost an understanding that if I have the right mindset going into this, like basketball can take me anywhere, you know, and like, and I have so much influence to be able to now like create like a positive impact everywhere I go
in the world.
And that's what's led to open doors, and that it's literally that mindset of just embracing the opportunity in the moment, and not just the stuff on the court, but the off the court stuff being equally as important, and those relationships that you make with people, that is what it's all about. You know, I don't do anything just for the money or just to kind of like get by. Like I want to do things, even this podcast, you know? Yeah. Like I want to do it like intentionally, you know, like and with purpose and, and so that's why, like what led to the next opportunity, it was, I had to really grow and mature in my mindset and know why I was doing what I was doing and how basketball was now almost, like I said, a vehicle. So once I got back to America, within 2 weeks, I, like, you won't believe this. This is super crazy. Like, I get a text from a coach in Australia, Simon, and he just got the head coaching job in their, like, number one league. It's called the WNBL. And he, like, sent me a text right away and said, hey, like, you know, would you be interested in playing in Australia? And so that's kind of how the Australia door opened up. He knew me because I played in China, like on this all-star tournament, like 2 years prior to that. So, I mean, it's just this like crazy tangled web of like, you never know when you make an impression on somebody and how that's going to lead to another opportunity. Right. So like you just, that's like foundational for me. Like I want to leave, you know, I want whoever's around me to feel good. And, you know, like, And it's not about like how they can help me or, you know, advance, but like it's about creating those relationships. And ultimately you never know when that leads to something else. And Simon,
I think, like, yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think that's a huge point for a number of reasons, from the perspective that, you never know who you're influencing, and at a number of levels, and you never know who's watching, you know, and yeah. It's you when you're younger, you know, you're told it time and time again, hey, you know, play as hard as you can. You never know who's watching, et cetera. And so when it comes to, you know, kids trying to get looks in AAU tournaments, or even when they're out on their own training, like you never know who's going to be watching at that time.
Yeah, that's so good.
It's monstrous to have that mindset, because if you truly approach it from that perspective, and it's, you know, of course you're not doing it for other people, but you mm-hmm. you understand like, hey, this is, I'm here in this moment doing this thing that I love doing and I want to get better. You know, people see those type of things, and people see, like you said, intent. People see people that are working hard and want to be their absolute best. And yeah, when you combine that with, you know, the talent and, you know, ability, you know, that's what's going to separate you. And going out down the line, as you do get to those stages, when you're playing in college, when you're playing overseas, et cetera, now all of a sudden you have this, like you said, this platform where, hey, you really can influence people in a positive way, but you know, that awareness is also super important. You know, people are going to kind of respond to how I do things. And yeah, I mean, it's a credit to you that you've been able to be in awareness of that all the long time, you know, the entire time, and then, you know, impact lives the way you have, you know. And that's something we'll get to here in a little bit, you know, because I know you do a lot of philanthropic work, et cetera.
Yeah, it's so, a tough word.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's been like my greatest joy, to be honest. It's been being able to give back. And I think sport it provides a tremendous opportunity and platform to do that. And it's beyond what I could have imagined, you know. It's that's the stuff that like fills me up. And I think what you said is so valuable, because, you know, like it's not only growing as a player, but it's growing as a person. Like, so you don't have to feel like you have to like walk on eggshells or turn it on all of a sudden, you know, because somebody might be watching. It's like developing into that person that you want to be around, you know, like not with the negative mindset or the selfish mindset, but the person who like is encouraging, and the person who cares about the teammates, who cares about how the coaches are doing, who cares about even the person that is unnoticed, you know, like maybe the person cleaning the gym, you know, like these are like seeing people on an equal playing field. It's just like, you never know what that will do to a person, you know. And I've just been so fortunate to, like, I think back on my journey, and like there's just like so many faces that flash through my mind of like people around the world. And I would have, if I hadn't like been intentional with that, I would have missed out on that moment completely. You know, I would have missed out on that relationship, or I would have, you know. And so much, I think, in our fast-paced life and times where, you know, it's nonstop, it's this, we can almost get like tuned out, you know, and distracted by our own mindset, you know, and we don't see these things. And so that's one thing that I'm like so thankful for as far as my professional career, is that it's not just about basketball. It's equally about life. It's equally about relationships. It's equally about like investing in another culture and really immersing yourself in that. And yeah, so I could talk about that subject forever, but then we'd kind of get off the basketball track, and everyone would stop listening.
Don't worry.
They're like, I didn't sign up for this.
When you're talking about something, you know, passionate, when you're passionate about something, things just kind of roll. So yeah. I'd rather have people talk about the passion than cutting them off, so to speak.
No, thank you.
I get it. Definitely. All right. So you got down to Australia, and you've played on a few teams down there, and then you've also worked, or played on the Chinese Taipei national team. So talk a little bit about your, not just your own development, but kind of some stylistic differences between, you know, those different areas and levels.
You know, that's my favorite thing about basketball. Like, I love the international game. I love seeing how different countries have embraced a style. And that almost team identity, that culture is, it plays itself out in the game of basketball, and it's a new challenge every time because you could have, you know, like for me on my national team, I'm like completely different than every single other person because I didn't grow up playing basketball in Taiwan and, you know, and just, and just the way basketball is structured there, it's so different than the American system or
also
different than, okay, well, it's, so basically, you know, you get identified as probably somewhere between the age of 12 and 15 and mm-hmm. you could be from all parts of the country. And I would say this is like pretty, what I'm about to explain for the Taiwan system is pretty similar throughout Asia, like whether it's China or Japan. You know, I don't know for sure, but it seems to be in the structure from what I've observed is, so you get identified as like a young athlete, and there's teams that that contain not only like, you know, a pro team, but also like a college team, a high school team, you know, maybe lower, but it's all within like this certain team, right? And so you have several of these structures, and so you get recruited by one of them and you go through this pathway. And so sometimes these kids, I know in Taiwan, they, at the age of 15, they might sign like a 15-year contract, you know, because once they get through, once they get through, you know, junior high, high school, college, then they might play, sign like 2-4 years of pro, and they're in that system. And so pretty much you would leave your family at that age and you would get the opportunity to become a full-time athlete while also studying. So you're still going through school, but you live in like that, you live with the team, you live in the, that environment.
And that community.
Yeah, that community. Exactly. And so there's very little like coming in and out of there, you know, it's, they have to protect it. And so, so you can imagine me like all of a sudden I'm thrown in the middle of this. But the national team, so the national team takes like the best players from all the pro teams, and then they try out and they are selected to be part of the 12 roster that gets to compete for the Asia Championship and then World Championships, Olympic qualifiers, that type of stuff. And so FIBA has this pathway, and so I just, you know, it was during that same week when I got the text from my coach in Australia. It was also, I got a text from my national team coach at the time, who was an American. And so he contacted me. And so basically I went and played all summer with my national team before I even stepped foot in Australia. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. It was the best summer ever. That summer tour was like, you know, I was in Taiwan, Japan, China several times. And then I also, within that same week of my national team coach contacting me and the coach in Australia contacting me, I also had another coach contact me about playing again, like representing the U.S. on an all-star team in China. And so in the middle of doing like my national team tour in Taiwan and Japan, I was also like, there was a span of, I think it was like 14 days, so 2 weeks where I was also playing in China representing like the U.S. All-Stars.
Right.
Yeah. So it was just, I'm telling you, like Denmark set me on this like acceleration where all of a sudden I was in a basketball marathon, and I finished, so I was playing all these different like leagues and tournaments and qualifiers all the way year long, and it was incredible. It was the best.
Basketball. So
when you're looking at the way the, okay, so that's how the kind of the Chinese system is developed, you know, between 12 and, or the Chinese Taipei system is developed, mm-hmm. 15 years old age, they see some talent. And is it just like, hey, we think you have potential. Would you like to join this facility? That's kind of how it works.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a huge deal for these, you know, young athletes to make that decision and to leave mm-hmm. their families. You know, they take right. on a tremendous amount of discipline and responsibility, and they mm-hmm. really have to become like a pro at that age and live and breathe basketball every single day. And so I have a lot of compassion actually for my teammates, and just there's benefits to that system, but I've also seen a lot of areas where it's been really hurtful and for some of those athletes. And so I think there's different pressures, like culturally, where in Asia, I think one of the beautiful things is the culture of honor that's established, mm-hmm. where like, if you are an elder, it doesn't matter if like you're older than me by like one day, like technically you're my superior, you know? And so
okay.
Whatever you like ask me to do, like, therefore I have to honor you, you know? And so there's just, it can be taken advantage of, that system. And, but it can okay. also be like really, really awesome to learn how to like, you know, almost submit yourself to authority and how to really learn how to honor people. That I think sometimes in the West, like we don't grow up with that framework. So it can right. sometimes be about like all about me and, you know, all of that. So I definitely see pros and cons with that system, but I think the benefit of what we have in the West is you have people, for example, like Luka Doncic, you know, who plays mm-hmm. now for the Dallas Mavericks, and he's a young player, but like he's gotten, even in like, I think he was like 13 years old when he, you know, was a pro in Spain, or, you know what I mean? Yeah. So like yeah. you're, mm-hmm. you empower young people to shine and step up in the midst of right. like, they could have, you know, teammates who are way older, but they're empowered to do so. Where in that honor, I've noticed sometimes where I have, you know, young teammates who have tremendous potential, but they almost like have put a cap on their, like yeah, almost like a like, ceiling, you know, where it's like, but I don't want
to dishonor this person yeah, in front of yeah, me. I don't want to embarrass them.
Right. Yeah, I'm not gonna compete. And like, and that shows up even in practice, you know, where, oh, I can't embarrass like her because she's like my superior, so you know? So like yeah. where sometimes in the West, you know, like in our practices, you know that your teammates are ultimately your teammates, but your competitors as well. And so you're making each other better. And so there's different limitations that come with that culturally, but you learn how to like take the position of a servant, like everything from sweeping the floors to getting the basketballs mm-hmm. to, you know, like the attention of detail that's taught through that system of how to serve others, I think is a really mm-hmm. beautiful thing. But it goes too far sometimes where, you know, I just feel like, hey, you know, just because you're younger doesn't yeah. mean you have to like wash my clothes, you know, like I can do that. Like right, I'm good, right. you know, like it's sweet. It's really sweet. And so I had to kind of navigate, like, just like in any landscape, you know, you don't want to like walk into it thinking, oh, like my way is best, or I know way, everything, right. or, you know, right. like how we do things is just the it's greatest the in the world. Like yeah. I don't ever want to have that attitude. So I try to like, if I go to a new environment or a new team, I try to like really be aware of, okay, what's the culture like here? You know, what's respectful and what is, what's going to really challenge it. And cause I can't empower it unless I take the time to first understand it. Otherwise I'm looking at it from my own lens and that's skewed. And so I've been able to really, through the years, that was like 5 years ago with my national team.
Right.
And now like continuing to see that evolve, and it's constantly changing. And so, you know, mm-hmm. things that I've noticed in a few years ago, it's no longer the case. And so there's okay. different things that
so there's progress there.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's learning to first, you know, observe instead of trying to like put in my expectations or my, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. So that's been a challenge, but.
So while you're, let's see, so you're at Chinese Taipei for the national team. I mean, that's basically during the American summer, is it? Like, what is the scheduling like for that? I mean, how often do you practice? And then, what's that role on the team? How has it evolved? Are you still that with that team? Are you that back to basket player, or are you, in that mid post? Do you have to like stretch out to three now, like a lot of players do in the current day and age? Like, what do those things look like?
Yeah. So, my Australian league, actually for the past few years, I've been playing in a summer based league, which is like the American summer, but the Australian winter. So I was kind of like chasing winter around for a few years. anyway, so that means that I would be in my Australian season and now I'd have to be in conflict with when it comes to my national team and different training camps and so I ever since the first time I started playing for my national team, I haven't had like a ton of practice with my teammates because I'm normally coming straight from something else. Do you know what I mean? And so I've had to kind of coordinate because, like I mentioned earlier, I don't have an agent, so I'm coordinating between my national team coach, the Basketball Federation of Taiwan, and my Australian coaches and club, and kind of like create this happy place where everyone, feels like they're winning. And so credit to both like my national team and my professional team in Australia. Like, they've been really supportive of, as long as I want to do it, my national team cool with like, hey, even if you come like the day before we start playing, come. And then my pro team's like, hey, like even if you miss like four games, go, and so they've been really gracious in how they've allowed me to do both over the years. But that being said, like, that's what comes with tremendous challenges now. Like, I'm in an Australian basketball environment, and now I'm jumping into Asian competition at the highest level, which is in front of like lights and audience and, FIBA. Yeah. It's like the biggest stage. And so I'm having to learn plays like right on the spot. And I'm having to like develop chemistry best I can with my teammates. And also, not only that, the style of play is very different because Asia, it's all about speed and quickness, and just the pace of the game is like boom, 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 boom. So I'm just winded, but luckily I like to play like a fast tempo game. So that's fine. But I just have to, as far as like, talk about like you get into a rhythm as a player. And sometimes if that gets sped up, you don't want the speed of the game to allow you, especially as like a person who's supposed to finish and make plays, like allow that to now, because like if you're used to doing a move and if it's just a second quicker than what you practice, like that can throw it off, and so so learning how to like maintain my tempo in that context, it's definitely been challenging but rewarding as well.
So within that then, where do you catch the, like, do you have the same looks? Do you have the same way where you find the ball catching the ball, whether it be, in the post off of pick and roll, pick and pop, like what is it that you do on each of those teams? And then how do you kind of prep for that?
Yeah. So because like I mentioned earlier, I have great relationships with my coaches. They're actually very in tune with how I'm playing and what I'm doing. And so there's a ton of feedback on both sides with the national team and my pro team on just like, okay, even though the style can be completely different, where can we best maximize you? And so there's moves that I might be doing within the offense of my national team that I'm practicing in Australia. I might not be doing that in the game, but I'm making it become repetition so that when I go, like, that's familiar because I know that's right. going to be expected of me. So I would say, you know, as far as my game, like, I definitely love pick and roll. Like, that is my favorite thing ever, aside from, like, transition. Like, I love I love pick and roll situations and pick and pop. And I definitely have expanded my game to be, like, a three-point shooter, which is life is better on the perimeter. I will always stand for that. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, who's blocking that at those levels?
Yeah,
I mean, if you got Griner or Brianna Stewart, like, no, like, if you're hitting that shot consistently, like,
it's
that is a great shot for the team, man.
Yeah, I love that feeling where you can just knock down a three and run back, and it's just like, wow, that was effortless, you know? Like, I didn't have to seal, I didn't have to force position, you know, it was great.
Like, a lot more different than college, isn't it?
College and just, like, personally, the way teams play defense against me is they try to be really physical, especially under the basket. And so, you know, looking back, like, one thing I wished I would have done better is also, like I mentioned earlier, the stuff like just joint mobility and making sure that as you're playing, you know, season after season and game
taking
after
care
game
of the body.
You're just as intentional with that part of it too, because the longer you want to play, like, you have to be so locked into making sure that your muscles can support that type of contact, you know, and we're all going to have some wear and tear, like, that's inevitable. But I think, like, the biggest encouragement I have for young athletes is look into having a great trainer who knows what they're doing, who's not just going to put a ton of load on your joints and make it worse for you, but, like, that knows how to properly, you know, expand your joint range so that, like, you're, like, conditioning that movement so that if you are like on the basketball court and you land awkwardly or all of a sudden you get bumped, like, you're able, instead of that being like a career ending injury, you're able to just, like, bounce back and, like, just, you know, land properly. Like, that is so, I cannot emphasize the importance of that, because that's something that, like, an avenue that my brother has gotten really into. And so it's been awesome having him just, like, help me learn about that whole side of things. Cause, like I mentioned earlier, it wasn't my cup of tea, but now it's, like, my best friend. So that's one thing, you know, I wish I would have, knowing, like, how much basketball I was playing, I wish I would have, like, actually taken the time to be stronger, not bulky, but the type of
strength
that you can hold your own ground without, like, you know, getting knocked. And because I've had tons of injuries like you, you know, it's part of the game, but I think some of it was self-inflicted.
Right. So looking back, is there anything else, like, you would have done differently? Obviously, you're not done by any means, but, you know, up until this point, is there anything that you would have done at any of those stages, you know, whether it be, you know, grade school, high school, college, beginning part of the professional level? And you mentioned the physical part. Is there anything else that sticks out? It's like, man, if I would have done this, this probably would have put me in a position to be a little bit more successful, or, you know, would have better put me in a better light, or so on and so forth.
Yeah, that's a good question, because I think I've learned something new, multiple things. It seems like every season, you know, you get challenged in different ways, or you grow in different ways. And so I think not only, like, what I mentioned, the joint stuff, and also, like, the emphasis on skill development and the doing the boring stuff right, you know, putting time into that. Because sometimes, like, we want things, like, we want fast food, you know, we want it, like, to just
we want it
overnight
now.
And you don't realize, like, some of the things that it's like, lately I've taken up gardening. I know it's super random, but, like, you sow a seed now and you might not be able to see the fruit of that 9 months later. You know what I mean? So, so I think just another thing I would mention, aside from, like, the gym and the joint health and just developing that mindset where it's not all about me, you know, even though I'm aggressive and I want it, and this is my dream and this is my passion. It's like actually seeing the people around you, actually learning to like give back, actually learning to appreciate what you have.
Giving back and gratitude.
Yeah, that's going to go so far. Because honestly, like, you have a choice, you know, on how you're going to respond. And I know, like, as athletes, like, we have so many different things that come as adversity. And how we respond in those situations, it's like such an opportunity to grow. And instead of complaining or being like negative or even developing a bit of a victim mindset, like, no, like, I don't want that a part of my life, you know? And I would say, like, for me, all of those things have come through the seasons of there's always like some nuggets that I get in the good and bad seasons where I'm like, man, I wish I knew this earlier so I didn't have to
What are some small nuggets that you feel like you've gained in a couple of the seasons, both on the good side and bad side?
Anything you can talk to specifically? I think like the blame game, you know, when I was younger, you know, it's almost like a self protecting mode, where like in order to protect myself and even like my insecurities or whatever, it's like, I gotta blame my coach for the situation, or I gotta blame that teammate for not passing me the ball or taking too many shots, or I gotta blame that ref. And I think like throughout the course of the game, we know there's a ton of things out of our control, you know, like
control what you can.
Yeah, we totally know that. And yet you can get so caught up in like, oh, this is unfair. Oh, I don't deserve this. And totally miss out on like the learning moment that you have to grow as a person in that time. And I really, really believe that like, had I approached that mindset earlier, like I would have loved my college experience way more than feeling like I had to like develop a new love for the game in my pro season. You know what I mean? Like, because it's not easy to be challenged like physically, mentally, emotionally every single day. It's not easy to get up and do it all over again, you know? But you realize when you've come out of that season that it was those days that like really defined you. And then you get around other people in the world and then you realize, wow, like I have this tenacity about me that wasn't there before. I have this determination about me that like I know is unstoppable, you know? And so I think those are the things that like I wish I knew earlier. It was just embracing the challenges, not as like a victim and starting to blame or complain or be negative or get all in my feelings, but like actually saying, okay, this is a situation and this
is how I'm going to respond maturely.
Right. You know, this is how I'm going to respond with love. This is how I'm going to respond trying to see it from a different perspective of maybe what my coach is going through or maybe what this person's going through. You know, it's not all about me. And I think that is like the number one thing that I have to give in how my journey with basketball has evolved. It's totally about that moment of over time knowing like, okay, even if everyone else can see this is unfair, I'm going to respond with grace and with love and let's just see what happens.
And do what you know? Be to your identity. And I think, you know, there's, as you're saying that, there's a number of things that kind of jump out to me that I was kind of making notes on that I wanted to speak to. And one was, you know, process or concept of habit formation. You know, when I'm, you know, whether it's training an athlete or, you know, trying to make some sort of life change or whatever that may be, it's those, you know, you're trying to make this change, you're introduced to this change and you have this concept of what you want to be. It's again, whether it's in life or in skills training, skill development, it's the same. It's like, you have this introduction, you try to get better at it. But then as you try to get better at it, and when you're in those adverse situations, it doesn't always go that way. But then over time, if you want to get to that, you know, from a skill perspective to that level of mastery, or, you know, from that life perspective of being able to stick to that identity, to who you are, It's being able to, over time, get those reps in and being able to do it when you have a lot of stress and when you're tired and when you're not at your best. Yeah. You know, it's, and I think, again, speaking to the skills training point of view, you know, it's easy as you're learning a skill to do things when you're fresh. When you're in, you know, you're feeling good and things like that. But when you're, you know, and mentally maybe not in the best place, and when you're missing shots and when you're tired, and can you then still be able to persevere and make, you know, and make shots in those type of conditions? Can you do those things? And then train yourself so you can be in those positions to work on it. And it's the same thing in life where, hey, I want to be able to, you know, small things. I want to be able to go to bed at this time, or I want to be able to talk to this person, et cetera. It's like, well, all right, you know, you start small and over time you build it up. But then when you get to those moments when it's not always the easiest, you know, that's what helps. That's what creates who you are, you know, as a person. Do you feel, and this, you know, this was kind of my experience as well. Once you went abroad, all of a sudden you're doing things more and more on your own. How do you feel like that affected you and like your current identity and who you are and how you kind of view the world now? Cause it sounds as though, you know, and I know it, especially for me, it was the case, but do you feel like that has really changed you, in a lot of ways for the positive in comparison to how it had been previously?
Wow. Yeah. That's a great question, because I'm 100% a culture girl, you know, like I live and breathe internationally. Like, get me on a plane anytime. Like, the number of times I've like booked a flight and left the same day is just ridiculous. You know, like it's crazy, but I love it. And like you, it's, I think sometimes it takes stepping outside of your comfort zone, or it takes just a different perspective on doing the world. Yeah. And you realize, wow, hey, like, we do things in America, but they do something this way, and we can learn from that. You know, it's not that it's, you know, and I think that's really healthy and that's positive. And what I would say, like, my world now being so predominantly like US, like Europe, Australia, and Asia is that all these different like parts of the world combined, like, it allows me to be able to like connect with people on a deeper level, where it's like,
right.
I now, like, especially if I see someone from overseas or wherever, like, more likely than not, I've been to their country, you know, like it's awesome when someone feels like understood, because so much of who we are is shaped through, you know, our experiences. And I would say, like, that's been the most beautiful thing about my journey, and like getting to totally challenge my previous frame of mind of like, wow, like, I never knew this existed, you know, like, a couple years ago, I got to go to like the poorest of the poor, like remote village in like this really small island in the Philippines. And like, literally, it was, I went as far as
like, Bhutan?
A little vehicle. No, that's actually, that's also another amazing story and opportunity. Okay. But Bhutan is tucked away in the Himalayas, and it's gotcha. Exactly the same thing, where it's like super untouched, very isolated, like, before, you know, a few years ago, like, there weren't even like flights into that country, or, you know, roads containing, you know, if you wanted to go, you'd take a horse trying to find your way. Like, seriously, like, it is crazy. Yeah, the fact that these are the ends of the earth, you know, it's not only getting to see like beautiful Sydney, Australia, or whatever, you know, it's like, literally, I've gone to the furthest places off the map. And some of those have been my greatest joy, to connect with people there that, you know, they've never been to America. Like, they don't know me really, but as humanity, you know, sometimes I think, you know, where we can get divisive and really polarized, I think the more you're exposed to different cultures and different people groups, and whether it's the rich elite, like in Bhutan, I was like with royals, you know, and in the Philippines, like a week later, I was with the poorest of the poor, you know, that, and I think like in both situations, you realize that, like, wow, even though this is really extreme, like, humanity, mm-hmm. like, we as people have so much more in common than what we do, the little differences that we tend to put, like, a ton of focus on. And so that's been a beautiful thing that I've gotten to see firsthand and experience. And it's just, like, it leaves you with this, like, desire to, like, see more and do more and to become more, you know, because, like, these are real people who have real need, you know, and things that we so often in our privileged context, like, and when I say privileged, I mean, like, even have access to education, you know, like,
right.
These are things that sometimes we just take for granted.
Yeah, exactly.
Or don't even value. And when you are among some people who don't even have that opportunity, it just puts everything in a really healthy perspective. And you realize that, like, I don't deserve anything. You know, yeah, like, everything that I've been given, it's been, like, a blessing, you know, like,
yeah.
So while I can complain about, and I think, you know, this is going to get me on a whole nother tangent, but social media, you know, people have different things they say about it, but it can breed this, like, comparison of, like, oh, that person's life looks better than mine, or, oh, look at them, and mm-hmm. they're getting all these extra offers, or what we, you know, we're, like, the same type of player, you know, whatever that comparison, that root is coming from, you know, it's one of my favorite quotes is, like, comparison is the thief of joy. And it's so true, because if you're constantly, like, comparing yourself with someone else or thinking that they have it better when you're only seeing their highlights, you know, it's almost like this false, you know, negativity that creeps into you, and it's just not healthy. And so that, all of that being said, like, I think there's tremendous value in actually, like, going outside of your own context and experiencing, like, a culture or something that's totally different than what you've previously been exposed to.
Yeah. No, and that's the ability to go out and, yeah, see the world, experience different things. I mean, it mellows you out. It gives you other mm-hmm. perspectives, you know, and to be able to, like you said, be in the positions that we've been able to be in and be privileged to see such things. And have those experiences, it truly is a blessing. I wanted to speak to that a little bit as well, because I know when we were in Denmark, we'd have our faith discussions here and there. So speak to mm-hmm. like how your faith has played a role in you know, who you've become and what you're doing and how that has helped shape you.
You know, that is the biggest part of who I am. Like,
right. Like
my faith is 100% the reason why I play basketball. It's the reason why I'm willing to sacrifice everything. It's the reason why I live and breathe, you know, like, it is the core of me. Like, it there's no separation, you know, like, there's no, like, oh, I'm just putting my faith, like, on a Sunday morning, or I'm just, you know, like, showing up this way. Like, it has literally become my entire life, you know, of how I can learn to love, how I can learn to be humble, how I can give people grace, how I can be willing to, like, actually learn to suffer, you know, like, these are, like, huge things that don't come through human effort or through my own ability to perform, but it's all been, like, supernaturally of just the time spent, like for me personally as a Christian, like, the time spent going deeper with God, and it's in those quiet moments, and it's in the time of understanding, like, what's bigger than me, you know, like, why am I here? And that's one thing that, like, you know, I want to see purpose in everything that I do. I don't want to waste my time. I don't. And I think our generation as, sorry. I just got a phone call. I don't know if that went through on here.
No, we're good.
Oh, it was, like, ringing on my laptop. No, I think, like, I'm a part of the millennials generation. And I just know that, like, my generation is looking for purpose and meaning, you know, is looking mm-hmm. for significance in what we do. And I think that's a really powerful thing when you find it. And I feel like I've found a treasure that I will never lose, you know, and I'm still continuing to like discover the beauty of it more and more. And it's the only reason why, yeah, I do half of the, like everything. Yeah. Yeah, it's so funny because, and I would say Denmark was a huge turning point in that faith becoming not just, you know, oh, like I want to glorify God with my gifts and talents, but I like that, you know, I really like that, but some of that glory, like, is I'm going to take too, you know, like, honestly, but learning from growing from that place into a place of like, wow, I really want to shine. And what does that look like? You know, and it might look different from what the world thinks is glorious. It might look different than fame or, you know, like money or all these things that are good that I've gotten to experience. And I've gotten like the things that the world says is like the best ever. Like I've had all of that right in my hands. And, you know, it's great, but it's not satisfying. But I found the one thing that is. And that's why, you know, I put all my hope in it. And I continue to live this lifestyle of like, I don't know what the future holds. You know, like I don't have a set plan, you know, in place right now. Like I'm just going with what I feel.
Going with the flow.
Yes. And I think especially, you know, in this time of uncertainty that's happening around the world, and it's an unprecedented time, you know, talk about like the Olympics being postponed or the NBA, you know, like, and college basketball, like no March Madness, you know, all these different leagues around the world canceling. And I just have so much compassion because I know what it's like to be in that journey where like you pour your blood, sweat and tears into this, you know, and it might be your one chance. And especially for the seniors who, you know, they don't have another chance to like do it again. And so there's this almost escaping opportunity to finish well or all of that, you know, and so I feel for just the athlete community globally and like but I also think it's really healthy for us because we can be so driven and so focused and constantly like I think athletes are the hardest people in the world to sit still, like because we're used to being active and we're like going, you know. And And I would say like learning to just rest, it's just that reset, it's a gift, you know, and as uncomfortable as it might feel right now, like it's
take advantage of it.
It's exactly. And that's why your podcast and everything that you're doing right now is so timely, because these are times to not only just like I'm going to definitely sow into the basketball realm, you know, I'm going to definitely still do that, but it's like who I want to understand the full picture of who am I. Like maybe it's time to like also take up another hobby, or maybe it's time to read a book, you know, like do things that you maybe don't have time to do before. And so I've just found like this being such a refreshing time for me personally, while also feeling just the heaviness and the weightiness for the athletes, you know, who are in a similar position. And
that's what is next. You're talking about you don't know what holds for the future. I mean, obviously we have this time where we're sitting around and trying to figure some things out, but what was on the table, that or what were you going to be doing? And as possible changes, of course, what are some other options you might be looking into once all this stuff kind of settles down?
Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of funny, ironic, but last season, so my season ended in August, and then I played, like I represented Team World in a game in New York, and that was in September. And ever since then, you know, I've had opportunities to like go back to Australia or re-sign somewhere else. And I've just put that on hold. Like even with, you know, different things in the fall, there were a ton of Olympic qualifiers and Asia championships. And it was the hardest thing for me to do at that time to kind of say no to that, because I was on that path of like doing, you know, basketball marathon. But towards the end of last season, I really started feeling a need to just rest, a need to like step away for a second, get my body healthier and stronger, and just that time of refreshment. So I didn't exactly know what it was going to look like, if it was going to be me like retiring, which like broke my heart to think about, or if it was just going to be a year off to kind of like, you know, take care of myself, like I said. So I was kind of just, you know, using that time in the fall to not only get healthier and stronger, but also like to really do a lot of writing and a lot of reading and just going through my journey of like a different way to approach the game of basketball on a perspective where it's like, it's not about me. You know what I'm saying? So I've been doing a lot of that, and all of a sudden, you know, even the team that I would have re-signed with, like they're not playing this season because of the coronavirus, you know? So that was kind of, I was kind of already on this path of like, I want to rest, and now the whole world is resting. So it's crazy. Awesome.
Right.
Awesome. Yeah. You know, I got a little head start on everybody. And I understand the awkward tension of like changing seasons, you know, going from like being super busy and like in a routine to all of a sudden like not doing anything and almost feeling like, who am I, like lost a bit, you know, but like, like that awkwardness will phase, you know, as you're intentional with like discovering like what you want to do with that time. So anyway, all that being said, I do have like little opportunities coming up here and there, with college coaching. So we will see how that will pan out. Like that's all like kind of in discussion right now. And there's certain things that I'm waiting on, because it depends on a certain head coach getting a job. So it's, you know, it's not really like I'm just along for the ride kind of a thing. Sure. And then, I'm really not trying to force anything right now, because I recognize that this is a really interesting time period, in our generation and just in history. Mm-hmm. So I think everyone's had to force to almost like change their plans to some extent. And and I've definitely had to do that too. Like I've had some different things lined up that I've like, okay, well, that's not going to happen, you know? And so, yeah, I would say either I might continue playing, I might go into college coaching, I might do something totally by surprise.
right.
It's
just interesting to hear the way, you know, people approach different lifestyles. You know, I feel like I'm kind of in the middle where I need some structure, but I need to have that ability to ebb and flow. And some people are super structured, and some people are just like, hey, we're gonna take it as it comes and just, you know, go with the flow type thing. So it's always interesting to hear the perspectives on that. So
I've had to learn, you know, like with my plans have to be so flexible, like, because over the years, you know, the drop of the hat, all of a sudden now you're like going and playing, you know.
So
I've just had to be ready all the time, like just be ready and it will come, you know. And so I, in the meantime, I'm just enjoying time with my family. Like I'm really trying to discover like more hobbies and grow like multi-layered, not just as a basketball player, but in who am I on all different directions. And so just that self-awareness and that perspective is something that I love. Like I, you know, you've probably heard now by 1.5 hours that I'm really deep.
It's all good. It definitely. I mean, you're very introspective, which I think is definitely a positive for anyone to be able to kind of go down those pathways and figure those things out, and then just, you know, live the life they want to live as a result. I think it's super important.
Thank you.
You know, not enough people take that time and opportunity to do that. That's just kind of, hey, this is who I am, and they don't. It's not, you know, this is who I want to become. This is how I want to be. It's just this is who I am, and you know, this is my habit. So I'm not going to put any more time and effort in. I think that's, you know, it can be, obviously that's their life, that's their decision, but you know, as you know, we're coaches and we're athletes, so we're kind of sometimes on the other side of like, well, you can be more, but you gotta want to be more. You gotta be wanna make those changes, you know.
Exactly. And that's the fun part about life. It's like embracing those challenges and wanting to grow and learn. I think it's just like, and with that mindset, you're never going to like put a ceiling on yourself, you know, like it's just like basketball has given me the opportunity to not only be a player or a coach, but, you know, like do things that I never thought I'd be able to. And it was all because, you know, I agreed. I said yes to playing, you know, and I love that. Like there's so many surprises around the corner that like you just can't plan. And as long as you're like, you're willing to learn, I think why not? You know, there's no ceiling, there's no limit now.
Sure. All right. So how can people, if they wanted to reach out or had any questions or connect with you, you have, I think you said you're a little bit off of social media, but when you get back on,
So I'm still reachable. I'm just not trying to like post a bunch of stuff. Like I'm really, yeah. Like, I don't know. I'm not against it, but 6 months ago I was just kind of like, I was posting so much that I just really, like, I'm not like a huge fan of like, yeah. So anyway, yeah. I was kind of like, I like some privacy now and, you know, so.
So what's the handles?
Joyful3 on Instagram. So JOYFUL with the number 3. That's me on Instagram. You can reach me on there. On Facebook, you can find me at Joy Burke. I have Messenger and all that stuff. Yeah, those are probably like the best ways. But I'm also like, who knows? It's in the process, but I'm working on like a website and I might be like releasing a book soon.
Awesome. Do you want to speak to that a little bit? Or is that
I feel like this whole conversation has been like my book release.
We started the audiobook, Joy.
Yeah, audiobook. I'm just going to drive this into a book now. Yeah. No, I think there's a lot of valuable nuggets and lessons to be learned. And and I just really feel like, you know, everyone's story is so unique and so special. And I love that, you know. So that's why I wanted to capture mine. And it was also a way for me to just like reflect. And I think sometimes like being like a high achiever type of mindset that athletes are, you know, very driven and focused and always wanting to like position ourselves for the best future. But I think sometimes we don't look back enough and realize like, wow, like
how far we've come,
you know, it's just amazing when you really, really start to dig and look back into it and realize like how basketball has so beautifully woven in throughout your life. And, yeah, like I didn't even talk about my setbacks and stuff, and that's not even important right now because all of those things, you know, have been just such great learning opportunities that, you know, I can't imagine not ever going through it. You know, it's just so crazy. So anyway, yeah, like as far as like future stuff, like working on almost that holistic type of approach to the game, just mindset and be a giver.
Right.
Yeah, that's it. Maybe my book will only be one sentence.
Be a giver.
There you go. All right, Joy. Opportunities will come.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your time. Appreciate it. And I hope everyone else out there has been able to take a few of those valuable nuggets and learn some things from today's conversation. So thanks again, Joy.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Eric.